Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, how's it going tonight on this Wednesday night? This is Chef Stuardo. Welcome to Foodomania, broadcasting live from 1020 Radio Studios in the Pacific Northwest. How's everybody doing today? Well, I hope it's a good day for everyone. There's so much going on, as usual, in this great world of ours, and updating to talking to a bunch of different people. When I say a bunch, maybe half a dozen associates and friends who are somewhat back to work part-time. As you know, Washington, it's been about a little over a week now where they opened up at 25% most restaurants. Some restaurants are actually still staying closed, except for takeout and delivery. And that's usually because of the amount of time and space they might have to, make their restaurants suitable for the 25% reductions in, bodies inside the restaurant. And a lot of that has to do with separating the tables and having CO2 monitors, in some cases doing some new ventilation, and making sure that they're taking all the serious precautions necessary so we can get a continued open happening, as the last one, remember, only lasted a few weeks and then had to close again. So just keep hoping. Now, for the most part, according to most of the information released over the last 2 or 3 days, there is some reduction in the amount of cases and hospitalizations, but the reality is it's down to about the peak of where summer was this year. So in other words, we're going down, but we're still at the peak and still in that sort of danger zone. We are going to eliminate politics from all this and just work with, in any conversation we have, with just the reality of the science that is aware right now and the statistics and continuous observation of what's going on as far as COVID in our state. It's really a varying difference. And one of the biggest differences is between people who are so frustrated by this almost a year, literally within days of the beginning of the shutdown. It's hard to really believe that it has been that long. Quarantine mania with almost 300 shows over the last year. And yeah, some things have changed. So the only big difference between tonight's show and the last show we did is the fact that things are open. And because of that, bunches of people are back to work. Some trading is going on, meaning money is exchanging hands. There's still a long ways to go. But I think more than anything, because some of the people that are back to work are on, again, they're on maybe a third of their normal schedule. And then also the reduction in, by almost two-thirds of the business on a regular basis is going to be a little taxing financially still. But I think the big part of it is the fact that people can look forward to saying, tomorrow, God, I work tomorrow for 4 hours. They can get out and start doing what they love to do. And that makes a huge difference. It's all about, you know, so much positivity and going back to work and being part of your shop again and seeing people that you worked with before and just all the cooks I know who have been cooking for months and months at home are back under a little bit of pressure and orders are coming through the window. And it's, I would say for the most of the conversations I had, people are feeling pretty excited about it. And I think, like I said, the spiritual part of the whole thing, the well-being in our brains and our bodies and our minds, and the fact that we're, even if we were home for a long time doing a lot of work, I mean, I have been fairly busy for several months. And again, it's for the most part with deadlines, you know, doing broadcasts and doing some projects that I'm working on and teaching. There's a schedule to follow, of course, but I have to say having a little bit more flexibility in certain time, being able to work for the most part from the same studio space and having for the most part, most of it to myself, I'm able to keep things going. But there's nothing like interacting with other people in person. I, you know, I miss that. And get to do it a little bit more these days, thank goodness. But I would say as just a final thought is just to keep going out there. I know many of you are not returning to work because, unfortunately, some of these great restaurants have had to close down. Some of the food routes have been shortened for some of the salesperson and some of the front end and bartenders are still, you know, it's very limited. In a lot of cases, they're not bringing back the bartenders and the some of the wait staff because of, again, the reduction in hours, more the reduction in space at 25%. So, you know, a small percentage of people going back and the door is starting to open for other people whose places are still open. And hopefully more and more of us will be back to work soon. And you all deserve an incredible, you know, medal for patience. I also want to extend Foodomania's wishes and love and prayers to all the families and loved ones and people connected with some of the ones that we've lost, over 500,000 people. And we have to think about them and try to give back to as many people as we can by supporting them, whether it be over the phone, through letters, through some kind of Zoom gatherings, at all this loss, this wasteful, sad loss, will take a very, very, very long time to have it not hurt so much. And on the other front, more and more people are taking the vaccine when it's available. And I also know that for the most part, most of the classes are open for students coming back to school at least a couple of days a week, though there's still some issues. And I also want to say thank you to all the stay-at-home parents and brothers and sisters who are slightly older who might be off work who are assisting with trying to keep the kids active in their classes at home, which I have to say is such a rough situation. There's so many kids that just don't do that well without the interaction. And there's also one of the biggest things is the time problem. People's brains change. You know, when you're working a night shift and that's your job and you're used to working till 5 or 6 in the morning, going home, maybe having a little something to eat, take a shower, and for the most part, get to sleep within a reasonable amount of time because you have to get up again and be back at work at 6:30 or 7 the next night. Well, it's the same thing with the kids, you know, by Zooming on their own and doing the classes, kids are more tired. Maybe they're taking naps after school and then they end up staying up most of the night. And then the little sleep that they get to wake up in the morning and get back on class. So everybody's kind of clock is all over the place. I encourage people who, you know, are struggling with their kids a little bit to reach out to the school and, you know, reach out to as much information and teachers in ways that you can do the best job you can without the additional stress and frustration because you're not alone. So I encourage you to call the schools and most of us, I know, are getting regular correspondence from the teachers. And they got their hands full. They really do because, you know, even though they have to continue to grade papers and come up with interesting things via Zoom and, you know, the option of keeping your Zoom window open in a class. So I know as teaching some of these classes and doing the Zoom cooking classes that I've been doing with the kids, you get about half of them that are actually on the screen that you can see them. And the rest of them are there. You can hear them, but you'll just basically see a black screen with their name. And they're not obligated to have to keep the window on. So usually in my classes, I try to get people to turn it on at least a couple of times during the part of the class, the ones that aren't watching. And just for them to visually check in, especially when we have a guest. My classes, you know, of course, the cooking classes. So when I have a guest chef with the class I'm doing, I try to make sure that everybody gets back on screen for a few minutes to acknowledge the volunteer chefs that have come in and done the classes, and as well as thanking them. And also, I have to tell you, I just enjoy seeing everybody. I don't like the black windows that much with the, you know, light, the writing. And then all of a sudden, the screen lights up again. For a little bit, you'll see a face, you'll see some kind of reaction, and it'll go to black again. But listen, as long as the kids can stay engaged. And now with having the real classes and following the best safety procedures that everybody can do, and with some funding being hopefully starting to be made available to more schools, more classes will be open. So I guess the wishes of Foodomania is for everybody to work together and reach out when you need to. And take advantage of the support that is out there. All right, so tonight we're going to be talking about lobsters. And I'm going to tell you a few stories about lobstermen and women, of course, and their plight to the world of lobster fishing and how they've been affected, how people have gotten in the business, and how things have changed. And also we'll talk about some delicious lobster recipes. You know, the history of lobster, you know, for the most part, lobster was considered really a low-end food, not even considered anything that most people wanted to eat. And in fact, they used to serve lobsters to prisoners in prison as just sort of a scrappy food in the original days of lobster fishing. And as the years have passed, it became more and more of an item. And now, of course, these days, you know, to be able to get a good lobster will cost a little bit of money. And but at the same time, we're looking at a whole cult of personality around lobsters. So I'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'll tell you about a Maine lobsterman, a real Maine lobsterman. And his name is Herman Coombs, and he's a lobster fisher in Orr's Island, Maine. He's been fishing since elementary school. And he says he went full-time after high school. And all those years, he couldn't think of two times when the price of lobster has been any lower. In 2001, in the weeks after 9/11, and during the Great Recession, with restaurants in Portland and Lewiston and Maine's largest cities still closed for dine-in seating, and the state's crucial tourism industry sure to take a massive hit this year and has taken a hit. Because typically at this time of year, he's probably out on the water 2 or 4 days a week. He gets up in the early hours and takes his 45-foot fisher boat out on the water to spend the day hauling up traps, from the bottom of the ocean floor. And even though he makes most of his money in the fall and, you know, early winter, when he sets traps over 30 miles offshore, can you imagine? It might spend days and nights at sea. The season is still enjoyable for him. And he says that even in nice weather, he can fish in a T-shirt and be home by early afternoon during the right season. But not so this year for the last couple of months. He says he's fished maybe once a week or sometimes every other week. And the prices have fallen so low, and he's staying on the shore most of the time and has a lot of experience dealing with the uncertainty, but he says we're settling blind. He says that, meaning that he never knows what's in a trap until he gets there. So you can go 30 miles out to set these lobster traps and then work them, but you know, you can have maybe 30 or 40 traps out there. And if you're lucky, sometimes he comes back not even knowing until he gets to the surface of the water as they're pulling up the traps what he's got, and sometimes at a third traps he may get 10 lobsters. So, you know, it's a little frustrating. And they've reduced their business down right now to about 2 weeks, maybe every 2 weeks, and that's because of the weather. The weather has been absolutely nuts on the East Coast. And pretty much everything has been dropping. The prices have been dropping. It just puts more stress on the market. And, you know, he sells the lobster. He doesn't know 15 or 16 crates just sitting there that he can even get rid of it at this point in time. And that's mainly because the restaurants are shut down. I don't know. It's not normal. You know, it's not a usual thing. If you're going to have a lobster dinner, it's usually a pretty big deal. I know here on the West Coast, they have a different kind of lobster, of course, but when they do import Maine lobsters from the East Coast, if some of the bigger markets have these lobster mania sales a couple of times a year, didn't see it this year. I talked to the fish department at one of the local markets, and they hopefully expect to do a lobster mania this year in the early spring. But there was a time, like even last year, or about a year and a half ago, last lobster sale that they had here on the West Coast, he was still paying about $13.50 a pound. And guess what? Lately, at least on the wholesale level, it's actually gone down as low as $2.60. And these days it's a little bit higher up, but it's still taking a huge hit. You know, just the fuel alone that takes to go out on a normal day's worth of fishing in the diesel engine boats, even though it's diesel, by the time you're done, and you may have a crew of two or three on the boat right now, you've spent about $400 just in fuel before you even pick up a trap. So it's a real dedicated career and a really dedicated amount of work that you have to do. And that's true with all fishermen. I know in the Northwest, so many people I know, friends of mine who've been, you know, fishing for so many years, a lot of them have, in the last 15 or 20 years, have shifted careers. Excuse me, couldn't get that out. And one of the things I really like to do when I get a little time is just get on my scooter or on the bicycle and just ride the trails. And there's a really huge part of the island that I live on that has just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of boats up in dry dock, beautiful boats and many, many fish boats that are just sitting out of the water until things really, really change. And, you know, it's really one of those things that historically, I know a lot of people who are in other businesses now that were fishing for 20, 30 years. And even before things got a little tight and got really shut down, you know, people gave up fishing. A couple of different reasons. It's a hard market. Number two, plentifulness of the catch has been reduced in so many areas. Now, it used to be that I had friends, I'd see them during the year, and you know that around early spring, mid-spring, they're getting prepared to leave for 3 or 4 months to usually go up to Alaska to fish for a season. And they may go up there for 2 months and work really, really hard, and depending on the catch, come back with, you know, $25,000-$30,000. And there are some years, even more than that, and very much so in some years, much, much less than that. So all the work it takes to get a really, really nice lobster on a plate, it's a huge amount of work. And it's the same thing with the crabbing industry. The seasonality of crab seems to be reducing. So let's just hope that looking forward to the spring this year, that things will change for brave and bountiful fishermen and fisherwomen who work really, really, really hard to get us something delicious and also for them to make a good living. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a stretch, and I'll be back to talk about some recipes. Stick it out. Here's a little music.
Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land. Let my people go.
Thank you. Thus spoke the Lord, bold Moses said,
let my people go.
If not, I'll smite your firstborn dead.
Let my people go.
'Cause the Lord said, go down.
Go down.
Moses.
Moses.
Moses. All right. I don't know why that song just came to me and I need to play it. Hope you liked it. All right. So I got a in the chat window here, somebody wrote in. They want to know a little bit more about what I was talking about as far as the history of lobsters. You know, when the, you know, first European settlers came to North America, lobsters were so plentiful. They literally would reportedly wash up on shore in gigantic piles, like 2 or 3 feet high, of lobsters. They were like a precious source of sustenance, basically, during the hard times, as I said earlier, except they got them a nasty reputation, those lobsters, because they were really washing up on shore. They were considered like a poor man's food, you know? So the Native American population used them to fertilize their crops, and they used lobsters to bait their fishing hooks. They ate abundance of lobsters, basically preparing them by covering them in seaweed and baking them over hot rocks, you know, steaming them. And I think that that method of cooking them, can you imagine just steaming that lobster, fresh lobster on the beach? And by the way, I've done it. That inspired what was now known as the classic, like, New England clam bake. And first lobsters were, you know, they were gathered by hand along the shoreline. They weren't even thinking about fishing for them. And they were these boats, you know, in the 1700s, I think they were called smacks, like smacks. And they featured tanks with holes, and they allowed the seawater to circulate. And that's introduced in, those boats were really introduced in the Northeast in Maine. And basically, that was a way to transport the live lobsters. They'd be cages that would be at the level of the boat where water would flush through it, keeping the lobsters. And this is, again, deep freezing and that sort of stuff, but they keep them fresh until they got back to the shore. And it wasn't until literally the 19th century that trapping actually first became popular. Anyway, the whole thing about lobsters, the price was so cheap and there were so many. And like I said earlier, they were routinely like fed to prisoners and apprentices and slaves, sadly, and even children during the colonial era and beyond. A lot of servants actually sought to avoid lobster-heavy diets, mainly because they would only, they're, like, for instance, the way they were being paid was by the amount of, only served the amount of shellfish they could eat, and based on the price that they were literally having to pay for their own meals. When they first decided that there was something called, a lobster pound, and that was first established, believe it or not, after all the years of wild lobstering on the shores in Vinyl Haven, Maine, in, I think it was, let's see if I can see the date. Yeah, 1876. And the town is still there, and it's the home to the thriving lobster fishery that's there. The negative reputation, you know, of lobsters, where it started becoming less of a just a, you know, a junk fish or junk food. And it was basically, by the time World War II began, it was starting to be considered a delicacy. And the economy absolutely created these wealthy people to think they're the coolest things to spend a lot more money. Lobsters. American lobsters, they're called Maine lobsters. They can weigh up to 40 pounds, and they can grow up to 3 or 4 feet, 3.5 feet long, I think is the longest one. So I'll tell you a great story. But the largest lobster on record was caught on the East Coast off Nova Scotia. And that was in the late 80s. I don't think the record's been bitten. It was like 44 pounds, and it was almost 43 inches long. Can you imagine? And they say, by the way, I'll tell you my story in a second. The lobster was estimated at 100 years old, and that's literally twice the lifespan of the average lobster. It usually goes for about 39, 40, 45 years old. So here's my story. Many years ago, I'm originally from Brooklyn and moved out west in the early 70s. But at one point, growing up, spent a lot of time out on the Long Island in the Hamptons, Southampton, is where I went to college for a period of time. And in those days, I mean, well, first of all, growing up in Brooklyn, lobster was a big deal. I remember it was a big deal for my mom. And there's a couple of incredible lobster houses in Brooklyn. The one that comes to mind first is Lundy's, which if you ever get a chance to Google it, look up Lundy's Seafood Restaurant in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn. And the history is just like you'd see in the movies, a gigantic sort of Mexican casa-style tiled roof building with cream walls and lots of windows and a dining room that sat easily 600 people. And to try to go there on a Sunday would be the big day where families just went and had these beautiful, incredible seafood dinners. A lobster dinner with salad, lobster, bread, crackers, maybe a piece of pie and a glass of milk would cost you $4 for the whole thing. And I actually, now, I guess from what I know, my family went there and I probably went to Lundy's when I was 3 or 4 years old. I have no idea, memory of that. But I do remember when I was a little bit older. In my earliest memory, maybe I was 10 or 11. We used to go there periodically, maybe every other month or something. And I remember clearly, and I don't know why I remember this, but sometimes, you know, if you were 10 or 11 years old, you go out to dinner and your parents would let you pay the check. You know, the check would come and they say, here, Stewie, go up and pay the check. And I remember clearly, he says, and make sure you bring some change back. And I remember seeing a $10 bill in my hands. I remember it with this piece of billet, this paper that was the check. And I don't remember the numbers of how much it was. But for the whole family dinner, that's the four of us, my sister, myself, my mom, and my dad. We probably had the Maine lobster dinners. I don't remember what I had. I don't think it was lobster. I don't think I was into it at that point in time. It was probably spaghetti or something like that. And I remember they had this incredible custard, this sort of vanilla ice cream custard. The reason I also remember is I went there many times until I was in my late teens, early 20s. But I remember taking that bill up and paying it. Yes, young man. Okay, my friend, he'd call me, and I'd get the change back, and there would be $2 or $3 bills, I remember. So here we are. That could it have possibly been that the whole family dinner cost about $7 or $8? And then the $2 or $3 left for the tip, or maybe they only gave him $1. I don't remember. I do remember the $10 bill. Okay, here's the story connected to that oldest lobster. So many years later, after living on the West Coast, I moved back to New York for about 6 to 8 months at one point in the late 70s to work on a musical project. And my co-partner and musical friend, we decided to go out to the Hamptons for a weekend. It sounds really intense these days, but in those days it was just a couple years after my college town, when I went to school there, we rented a whole motel. They rented it out for the winter for students, off-campus housing. And it was like your typical, you know, one room hotel room, clean and simple and nice, $35 a month rent in the Hamptons. And by the time we went out there in this late 70s journey, my good friend's family had a little home out there. And I was able to go and stay there. And we decided we were going to have lobster dinner. Thinking of Annie Hall, if you've ever seen that Woody Allen movie, and the time they're out there trying to cook the lobsters and trying to get them into this big kettle. The person I was with for this journey, she told me there was no way in the world she's going to be in the house or anywhere near the kitchen if we got that little lobster in the pan. All right, so in the early part of the day, we loaded up the car and we went out to Montauk Point to this well-known lobster farm, which I went to many times over the years when I lived out there. And basically, just almost if you've ever been to a fish hatchery where you can see the different stages of the little, you know, literally tadpoles and going on up to full, you know, salmon getting ready to be put into the rivers. And lobster farm too. So they start out with little baby lobsters, and they, as you kept walking, they get bigger and bigger. And you get to this one section, and there's where the big lobsters. Most of them were $10 a pound at the biggest size in those days. $10 a pound. That $10 for an average 2 or 3 pound lobster. So probably $3.88. You could see a picture of an original price chart from that period of time. In fact, that specific trip. And that same lobster farm is right on the slideshow. If you're listening to the show on the player right now, you'll see that slide come up. And there it is, like, you know, $1.99, $2.99. So let's get one big lobster and we'll all share it. And we went to the one part of the tank. We saw this pretty darn huge lobster. And this lobster was about, I think it was about 20 pounds, a little less than 20 pounds, estimated at about 70 years old. And I asked them at the time, you know, what cooking this thing, is the meat going to be pretty good? I was told, yeah, it'll be good. And, you know, you just don't steam it to a certain amount of time or boil it. He gave us the instructions, I kind of remember, for a big lobster. Well, you know, there's a sort of a ceremony I've always went through in cooking a lobster. We decided to get this big lobster. And nobody, the two, my girlfriend at the time and my partner's girlfriend, refused to look at it. They saw them in the tank and they basically went off and took a little walk. They didn't want to know too much what lobster we were going to pick to take home with us or lobsters. So they didn't really know that we, instead of getting two or three little ones, we ended up getting this really giant one. And I'm telling you, we repeated the scene from the Woody Allen movie, where when we finally got home and everybody kind of relaxed and decided to go in the kitchen and get things set up for this, we realized that we really didn't have a pot big enough for this lobster. And we had to really, really make do. And I can't remember what we did. I think we went outside and we got some sort of ability to get some kind of strainer. I think we did it out of wire so that we could take about a half, I think it was a 25-gallon metal drum and be able to create some sort of a double boiler so we can suspend this lobster over some boiling water and put a lid on it and hopefully steam it that way, which is what we did. Now, okay, if you, and this is the part of the show that you can put your hands over your ears, and it's kind of a little eerie story, but the truth of the matter is cooking any kind of a live crustacean, whether it be a lobster or a crab, you know, if you're very sensitive to that, especially if you love animals and stuff, you don't mind going into the restaurant and ordering it and having it come to your plate and everything's great. But there, some people are a little squeamish to the idea of having to take this beautiful creature and plunge it into boiling water. Okay, I'm just going to be kind of blunt here on Foodomania. It's not something that I love to do or encourage to do, but this is what you have to do when you cook these babies. So we finally got this thing sort of contribute, and they finally said, well, we'll take a look at the lobsters. And we said, well, not lobster, we only got one. They got only one. Like, they were kind of afraid to look at it, but they couldn't wait to eat it. And then when we finally revealed And, you know, I remember they didn't have those rubber bands that they have over the claws like they do these days. This is the mid to late 70s. They had actually wire, a hunk of wire over the claws. So not only did we have to take the whole thing and put it in this sort of meshy, you know, fencing kind of stuff that we rigged this lobster cook. And by the way, it was very cool. We built a fire around this huge, you know, 25-gallon drum. And it was kind of so beautiful fire. We got, you know, put a certain amount of water in it. This started happening. The steam started happening. We actually used this sort of suspended strainer for the lobster, and we had a garbage can lid, clean, by the way, but, you know, we made sure of that, and used that to sort of trap the steam in. So everything was working really good so far. The friends, and it, by the way, this is not about the timid little, you know, shy person about lobsters, whether you're a woman or a man, because frankly, I was pretty in the same state. I just kind of kept it inside. But I have to say, by the time we finally got this thing going, I remember that when I cooked crabs and lobsters, you know, before at home in a big pot, it was kind of a little sort of sound that happened, which I didn't like. Maybe sometimes a little gurgler or something like that. It was not comfortable. So most of the time when I ever did it, I either put earmuffs on or cover my ears. You know, a grown kid, grown mid-20s guy, I was still shook. Yeah. Whereas, you know, my sister would just go in there, come on, let's get that thing cooked. She would have no problem with it. But when we, now imagine this as a sound person, you know what a steel drum sounds like. You know what the echo of having a big metal, big drum, 25-gallon drum, as I said, you beat on it, it'll make a whoa, big sound. So any kind of sound, you could really hear the boiling of the water. It was almost like being amplified through this other 2.5-3 feet of metal can. And a little bit of a rumble going on because you're hearing the fire. This is literally, look up, get on YouTube and look up beach fire. That's how beautiful this was. It was really, because their place was an old windmill that was converted into a cabin, literally 20 feet from, you know, the sand dunes, and then maybe another 35 feet up over the sand to the water. So you were right there. This is the classic clam bake. And it was really, and by the way, we had some really fun times there, but it was this moment of truth where everybody was outside and people, a couple, you know, it was just the four of us. I think we had two other friends over and everybody's having a beer, whatever they're doing out there, and having a little chit chat. And we get the thing going, and you don't have to stand right by it. So I remember coming closer to the group and then all of a sudden hearing a woo, woo. And it was just that boiling water reverberating in this big, you know, metal can and being sort of blasted through the speakers. This has got to be one of the, this is the early version of a Bluetooth speaker, except I would call it maybe a red tooth something. I don't know. It was wireless sound coming from the natural energy of a fire, water, and steam. And then suddenly the sound happened. Now, the only time I could tell you I heard a sound similar to this is when Raymond Burr was running down a Tokyo street, knowing that there was something called Godzilla very, very, very much approaching. And suddenly you'd hear, ooh, ooh. Now, by the way, I think when you turned into Foodomania tonight, you weren't expecting comedy, but I'm just in the mood. Anyway, the sound was really scary. And that woo was also mixed in with a little, ah! I'm telling you, I heard it. Anyway, the big lobster was cooked. The table was set about 15, 20 feet away from the lobster pit, so to speak. Very nice salad. Candlelight, a big couple of big tubs of beautiful garlic butter. Not much we needed. We had newspaper spread all over the center of the table. Really incredible East Coast Italian crusty bread and lots of beer. And suddenly we did our business. I used a sort of big set of shears, cut the tail open, was able to break off the claws. I personally love the inside of the lobster, the green guts, so to speak, the nectar, lobster nectar. People who love lobster and listening to the show know what I'm talking about. And, of course, you get rid of the gills and get rid of the stuff that is not really happening. We got it together. We put it in a huge bowl. Now, remember, this was about five people. It was about 3.5-4 pounds of lobster per person. And so it's like having your own 3-pound lobster. But we did most of the work, and I just remember how great it was. Everybody loved it. And the way the fishermen told us to cook it, I think the idea that we didn't have a pot and didn't plunge it into boiling water was really a blessing, because the steam cooked it perfectly. And, you know, we put it in, the shell was dark brownish, almost with a green tinge in it. And, of course, by the time we took it out, it was just bright red. And a beautiful, beautiful dinner. Did I think about the age of it? Did I think about the history of it? Yeah, I did a little bit earlier, but this was a very interesting treat. Would I do a big lobster like that again? I think I just lucked out on this one, because I talked to other people, and the first question they asked me was how tough it was. But I still think steaming a lobster is a really great way to cook it. Now, when you're steaming a lobster, you're getting all the delicious meat. All you're basically doing is going for butter and lemon and bread and a big washcloth for your face. The other part of that is, if you're going for smaller lobsters, another way, which you don't see it that much on the West Coast, but on the East Coast, they love other ways of doing the lobster. The first one would be called a broiled lobster, where they sort of open it up, clean out most of the stuff that I was just talking about, and then do a brushing of a heaping amount of butter and garlic. And then what they do is you sprinkle breadcrumbs over that. And then you just put it under a salamander or a broiler, and you'll end up cooking it fairly quickly, just not many more than 6 or 7 minutes under a very high-fired broiler. And that is going to cook the meat beautifully. It's going to give it a little crunch for the breadcrumbs on the top. And a lot of people like to eat that broiled lobster that way. And then a little bit of guts in it, they pour back in, and you're using the whole shell. The way it's opened up is almost like your bowl on another plate. The other way that people really love to do it as well is called a thermidor. Lobster thermidor is kind of like taking the lobster, using the shell, but actually creating sort of almost like an Alfredo cheese sauce. And you're going to take the lobster basically, and almost the same way as broiling it, but then you're going to create this beautiful sort of cheesy white sauce and just absolutely pour it into the top part of the lobster as you're butterflying the whole thing. And then you're going to do another little series of Parmesan cheese and breadcrumbs. And then instead of doing it in the salamander, this one's going to be baked. So you're going to put it in about a 425-degree oven, I would say, for about 15 to 18 minutes, beautiful golden brown. I like to do, you pull it right out as a thermidor. I take half of a lemon right off the bat, and I'm squeezing it out over the whole thing. Little crab forks and a little nutcracker would be good, another bowl for the shells, a big chunk of that bread, so you're dipping in it. Now, okay, you're still going to taste the delicious lobster, but you're going to get that creamy Parmesan sort of stuff and the breadcrumbs. And it's a really good way to do it. You know, thermidor is a good way to do it. But frankly, my favorite, I like the broiled sometimes, but I think the best is to just steam or boil it and just take that fresh, delicious meat, really simple, in the garlic and butter and the bread, and just go that way. Now, if you're really interested in trying this out, you can call around to some of your regular markets and fish markets and see who might have Maine lobster. Most of the time you can get it down south in a big market like where I am, going down to Seattle area to Pike's Market. But with the beautiness, if you're not on a strict budget and you want to indulge a little bit on this special treat, there are several different places you can order Maine lobsters and literally get them within 24 hours. And strangely enough, it's really not that much more expensive than if you went to a restaurant and had it. And it's certainly not as good as being able to go to a lobster farm. Where today I could go to Montauk, Long Island, and lobster is starting basically at $5.95 a pound, which is crazy. I honestly thought it was going to be up to $8 or $9. So about $6 a pound right now. You want to get generally a 2 pound, 2.5 pound. Because once it shrinks in the shell, take it out of it, it's about 1.5 pounds of meat. If you're going to do it, you got to do it, okay? Now, the indoor dining thing is not happening right now, but they do have periodically in some of the different casinos in your area. You could see if they're going to have a lobster fest. They usually do it on Valentine's Day. It's out of the question this year, and I highly doubt that it's going to be back anytime soon. But the markets do have lobster mania, and that happens a couple of times a year. If you're in a more a larger city with more of a selection of fish markets. I know the fish markets that I know here will get them on special order. And it's like anything else. If they're available, you could possibly place an order. And even if it's something that they normally wouldn't carry, they would probably, in a lot of cases, be able to order it in for you fresh. So I encourage you guys to do that. All right. I hope you learned something about lobsters tonight. It's really, really a fun history and a fun story. Very interesting. And there's a lot more documentary type of stuff on it. So encourage you to check YouTube out. I'll post some on the link to the show. Listen, you can write me at Chef Stuarto, S is in Frank, S is in Sam, T-U-A-R-T-O, at hotmail.com. And any requests for lobster information or links, I can also recommend places you can order from. I would be more than happy to do that. And also the lobster, 3 lobster basic recipes, accompanied with a couple of photos, are yours for the asking. So just write me and I'll send it to you. Now, a couple of announcements before I go. I am completely now set up for the Foodomania Zoom Cooking School. And the first classes will start in the second week of March. I'm excited about it. It's something that I've really just loved to do so much, especially over the last, couple of years, but especially over the last year with the classes that I've done that went so well for the kids. And now that my kitchen's studio kitchen, I'll call it, is all set up with 3 cameras, 1 handheld camera. So that when I'm doing some things, you guys through a Zoom class will be able to see it very close up and be participating. These classes are going to run in series, and they're going to be 4 weeks per series. You can audit the class and get copies of the class. The fees will be announced. It's going to be pretty reasonable, but it'll be 2 hours of your day to spend with me in the kitchen, and not only me, guest chefs from all over the place. I have a chef in Hawaii. She's now in Hawaii. Those of you who've heard her show, Jennifer Marie Sheehan, is relocated now to the island of Maui, and within a couple of weeks we'll be participating in that Food Mania show, as well as being a guest cook during some of our classes. An absolute incredible Italian chef who I've worked with for a long time will be doing a real Southern Italy class. And I'll be doing, of course, some of that as well. We'll have the pizza class. So the first show will be just national feasts. Like there'll be the Italian feast, the Eastern European feast. And then there's also an Asian feast. And then there's also a Mexican feast. That's the 4-part series in the first 4 classes. So absolutely keep your eyes open. Just like Chef Stuarto's Foodomania page on Facebook is the best way to get regular bookings of the show and know what's going on. If you've watched this show today and you're watching and listening to it on a player, just hit the follow button, and then you'll be able to get regular data. All right, there's so much going on. I'm so glad you guys tuned in tonight. I know it's late, close to midnight, but I appreciate you being here with me today. And this is Chef Stuarto signing off. Look forward to the next one. Stay tuned. Enjoy your lobster.